to the instructional system. We've grown from blackboards to green boards to overhead projection, trying each time to get closer to the real learning situation. We are perhaps in a second generation of hardware now, and the going is slow. We often do not know how to use the hardware we have and how to use it effectively. The equipment is coming into us at such a fast pace that perhaps we had better hurry and get on with some of it. The third generation of electronic gear may find us in classrooms without texts, indeed without walls, without instructors per se. We are facing a situation in which more students must be educated in less time and in less space, and surely must be educated more effectively and efficiently. This little TV presentation is but one idea of another educational tool. We were glad you visited with us. Come again.
The major portion of the collection of the University Library is presently located in the west wing of Bunnell Building. Here, the materials are available for anyone, student, faculty member, researcher, campus visitor, or tourist. The library staff added a coin-operated copy machine for public use just this past November as a new service. This self-service machine extends a much-needed dimension to the library functions. The card catalog includes the holdings of the community colleges and on-campus units, as well as the more than 200,000 volumes of the main library. At the reserve desk, professors place materials which they assign as required reading for their classes. A professional librarian is on duty to serve the reference needs of students and faculty nearly all of the 87 hours a week the library is open when class is in session. Overflows the major stack areas on the main floor, on the mezzanine, and on the ground floor. Also on the main floor are compacted the current issues of the more than 2,100 periodicals being received by the library. The Skinner Collection, the special collection of Alaska and polar materials, now numbers 5,000 volumes. Adjacent to the small study area on the main floor is a portion of the 59 newspaper titles currently being received. The New York Times is one of them. The microfilm file of the New York Times, complete from its beginning in 1851, is a major research tool. Students may use the microfilm room at their convenience. The microfiche edition of the Human Relations Area file is another important resource. A reader printer is available to produce hard copy from microfilm and microfiche. Thank you. the rare book collection, numbering just over 1,000 volumes, is a significant extension of the Skinner collection. Also located in the rare book room are shelves for the books which the library receives each week as a participant in the English Language Approval Plan. Here, faculty members review and either approve or reject those volumes within their subject specialty. There are only 4 listening stations to serve the recreational and assignment needs of our more than 2,200 students. There are 272 spoken word records and 670 music records, which may be checked out at the reserve desk on the main floor. The University Archives and Manuscript Collections, established in 1965, has expanded rapidly and is now severely overcrowded with more than 700 cubic feet of records. The archival program is responsible for the preservation of the significant non-current records of the university. The manuscript program is designed to provide students and scholars with primary source material for original research. Collections of papers such as those of the writer John Haynes, political leaders Diamond Rivers, Green, and Bartlett, records of corporations such as the Alaska Commercial Company, all form a rich resource. While researchers and staff must now work in limited physical facilities, the new library facility will provide excellent quarters. However, if the many fine historical collections which the university has received are to be made available to students and scholars in the near future, additional trained staff members will be needed. The United States Government Documents Collection, one of the 943 depository libraries around the country, is located in the Utilidor between Moore Hall and Scarlet Hall. The microcard and microfiche files of the publications of the Atomic Energy Commission, for which the University Library is a complete depository, and the extensive collection of the Congressional Record are located here in the Documents Office in the basement of Moore Hall. Of the United States government are supplied free of charge. The material available in this valuable resource ranges from a simple farmer's bulletin on how to construct a sheep shed to the most technical publications of the Atomic Energy Commission. Building will solve most of our present space problems, but will present a number of new ones. Additional staff will be needed to service the 2.5 acres spread over 5 floors, an area more than 7 times our present space.
Collections that are carefully developed, well organized, and properly managed are the foundation for exhibits, research and teaching, public school programs, and stimulating entertainment in a good museum.
Thank you. This is from the library. This is the videotape, a picture of where we are now. And many times each day as we look wistfully across the plaza, we think of the space that's across the plaza, where we will be moving next September. We will be showing slides of the floor plan. We are right now are handing out a packet of information about the library, to which we'll be referring a little bit later. This is the first floor of the new facility. The new quarters of the archives, the archivist's office, and all this back space to put our present 700 cubic feet and more collections to come. The microform room located here will contain 15 readers for the microcards, microfiche, reader printers, and so forth. The documents area, the documents office, the reference area, and spacious quarters. The map room will be a new service which we will be able to offer in the new library. Next. On the second floor of the new building, we are planning to pull all the periodicals together with display area here for approximately 4,000 titles. Our display area in the present building is actually about 150, where people can go in and actually see them spread out. The rest of the stacks will be for the bound periodicals. Also located on this floor, along the south wall, will be the staff lounge, closed book storage, a machine room where we'll have our Xerox copy machine, a microfilming camera, perhaps a key punch, we'll see. Along this wall are faculty studies. We are planning to reserve these last two to house the area for the ELAP, the English Language Approval Program. The receiving room of the acquisition department is along the north wall. There will be space here for our staff members. The main floor is actually the third floor of the library building. This is the main entrance. The rare book room will be spacious quarters in prime location. Although this presents us with one of our problems with the building, because it is outside the main part of the building, outside the main entrance, and we will have a problem of servicing it. The reserve room in the corner of the building will have seating space for approximately 100 students. Our present facility has space in the entire facility for 168 students. We plan that with this whole building, we will be able to seat 1,275 students. The reference collection, the Skinner collection, juvenile collection, an oversized collection, the card catalog area, the bibliography. These two areas are conveniently located to the reader services department, to the acquisitions department, which needs to check them for ordering procedures, and the catalog department. The administrative offices are through here behind the circulation area, the director's office and conference room, secretary's office, etc. The fourth floor has more faculty research studies. Along the west wall, there will be seminar type rooms for graduate study where students wishing to study in a group can make arrangements to do so. There is a room in the corner which is being provided with outlets for electrical typewriters. We are planning to intersperse the stacks and the readers so that there will be no reader or study space more than just a few feet from any of the books. This, with the carpet and the on the floor, should lend very pleasing atmosphere for the students to study. Along this wall are lockable individual graduate carrels. And the present facility, we have 12 individual carrels which are not closed in, which have a locked drawer. In the new library, we will be able to provide 47 of these lockable cubicles. The next slide. The fifth floor is pretty much the same as the fourth floor. On both floors, we are planning to provide a smoking lounge area. There will also be just general lounge areas in this corner and in this corner. We are providing desks here, but we are not planning to service, have anyone stationed on the fourth or fifth floors. The bulk of the library collection will be housed on the fourth and fifth floors, with the special collections on the main floor, the periodicals on the second floor. I think one of the things that we're going to miss most about our present quarters is the magnificent view we have of the Alaska Range. And even on days like this, with the sun just barely above the ice fog, it's, you know, it's just a glorious place. And we are going to miss this very much because we do not have a view of the Alaska Range. We do not have windows only on the main floor. 65% of the seating in the new library building will be of the individual study type. We are planning to provide the book stacks to hold approximately 400,000 volumes. And by the time that we move this September, our collection should be close to 230,000 volumes. One of the reports in the packet that we've handed out today is a study which Mr. McCarthy did, the University Archivist did 3 years ago. An analysis of the minimum book stock needed by the University of Alaska Library to support the very academic programs that the university is now offering. We have just completed an update of this study. And on page 7 of the original study, and on page 3 of the update study, I would like to do some comparison. For a basic collection, this study was prepared according to the Clapp-Jordan formula. Verner Clapp and R.T. Jordan are national library authorities. And this is the formula which they have devised to say what, to indicate what a minimum library collection should be. For any undergraduate program, there should be a basic collection of 50,750 volumes. For each faculty, full-time faculty, there should be 100 volumes each. And the comparison, our faculty 3 years ago was 266 and now it's 342. We need that many more volumes because of the increase of faculty. And there are similar ratios for the number of students, for the numbers of honors programs. Each undergraduate major program should have 335 volumes each. A master's program, which in the past 3 years there have been 5 added, there should be at least 3,050 volumes for each program. When we get to the doctoral programs, this is where we really jump. We have 7 PhD or equivalent programs now, and each of these minimally should have 24,500 volumes to support the research. In the future, the university will be considering new areas of study as each new proposed program is considered. The cost of providing library resources, material, and staff in support of these areas of concentration must be considered as a basic implementation cost, along with faculty salaries, facilities, and other overhead charges. The library should plan to close the gap between the resources it has at hand and those which it should have within the next 5 to 7 years. University support for the library program must continue to be strong. This strong support should be key directly to the growth of the student body, the increase in teaching and research faculty, and in particular, the addition of new programs that the university will choose to offer. Our present collection is probably adequate to support an undergraduate program. But with the number of master's programs and PhD programs, we are having to extend our services through the use of the interlibrary loan service handled through the Reader Services Department. This service is very time consuming, but it's certainly worthwhile, and we do need additional staff if it is to continue. And we are going to need to continue to use this until our collection is of an adequate size. During the past year, we have been involved in many varied activities. For instance, the Reader Services Department during the summer produced 8mm color film with a tape dialogue to use in our freshman and new student orientation classes, new students to the university. This fall, the orientation class was presented in conjunction with the English department, the first week of classes. And the Reader Services Department, I think, would cheerfully resign during the middle of the week because they had so many classes repeating the same thing over and over that very concentrated week. But it was a job very well done, as was evidenced by the number of students who passed the exam at the end of the instruction. A staff member of the catalog department has written a program as a computer class project, which will print out a copy of our complete serials record, which now numbers more than 5,500 titles. She has also just recently attended a special seminar to learn about the utilization of the MARC tapes. This is material which is produced at the Library of Congress. These are machine-readable tapes. And she went to learn how we could use these here at the University of Alaska. Also during the past year, the University Archivist has begun a program of computer-produced index to manuscript collections, and this has been in cooperation with the National Archives. In summary, I would like to thank the Board of Regents and the people of Alaska for their support in the past. This is evidenced by our new building. But in order to operate the new building, we need your continued support. It cannot be emphasized strongly enough that the library is here as the information center to support the programs of the university. And we need the full cooperation of the faculty, the administration, to build the type of collections these programs require. The goal of the library staff is to provide the best possible information service to support the programs of the university and the people of Alaska. And I'll now turn you over to Lou Lewinsky.
What I tried to show briefly on the tape was the scope of our collections. What I'd like to do now is go on and show you what we do with these collections. The collections are valueless unless they're used, and we do use them in a number of ways. One of the important ways of building collections is through field research, and field study is an academic pursuit in itself. Lots of the collections have been built up, many of the collections have been built up through academic department research, through research done by professors. The experience working in the field, bringing in materials, is a valuable one and a continual one. Use of the materials by students in the museum goes on continually. This is a class that met this semester in archaeology, working on archaeological collections, some of which were collected by Otto Geist in the 30s. These are of continued value for use and reuse in training students. Some of the materials are used in research by professors. These are Micratine skulls of Pleistocene that have been collected to tell us something more about the Pleistocene fauna of Alaska. We know lots about the big animals of that period, but not so much about the smaller ones. This is a particular study that's going on. It adds to the accumulation of materials here that's of continued value. The exhibit area is a very important one. Here we take the cream off the top of the collections and put it out for the public. And here a class can come in and use the material. This is a class in Eskimo, one of the linguistic courses, and what they're doing is going around looking at the material, using it as a briefing place for vocabulary. Individual students come in just to supplement their academic background. You can't know everything about everything anymore, but there are lots of things you want to find out about. This is an easy place to find out about them. Students come in, public school students. We have quite a school service program. We use student guides to take the students around. We had over about 2,000 students come last year from the Fairbanks Public Schools to use this. We don't feel that this is really a big enough group of students coming to the museum. We're not reaching enough. We're going to try next year to work out a program with the public schools where we carry off some of our objects and an instructor to the public schools and can reach a larger number at one time. Here we have to deal with groups of about 15 at a time because of the limited space in the museum exhibit area. This is an old exhibit we put on at the Terranoff Fairgrounds. We try to take the museum off campus, use it at fair situations. These are some of the Micratine specimens in the study collection. These were sent to the Smithsonian, where they were working up a new taxonomic study of Micratines, and so they borrowed all of our specimens. We had one of the best collections of mice from the north. We send things out on loan for other exhibits. These were in San Antonio, the hemisphere. They needed material that illustrated transportation. Here are some items from the north that we could provide. All of our exhibits get built in this particular room. This was a gear locker when the building was a gymnasium, and it's not very handy, as you can see, for cutting boards. But the point of the picture is that we use lots of student help in the museum. And as a training area for students in various fields, not only in exhibit construction, but in cataloging and working with different collections. We have many students working with us in their available time. At one time, we had 30 students working at one time on the museum staff. We go off campus in other ways. We try to help other museums in Alaska, and we run workshops. We had one here. This was the one in Sitka. We used all of the facilities available in Sitka. We met at the Centennial Center. We used the Visitor Center. We had people from all over southeastern Alaska there, and some from other areas. This year, it'll be back on campus again. We also supplement that with seminars. We have a seminar in the Kenai Peninsula. We're working in Nome and in Ketchikan and in Homer with those particular museum groups. On this chart, what I've tried to show is something about our program, the kinds of things we're doing. We're trying to have changing exhibits on campus. We're having traveling exhibits to different places. And this is going to grow. As soon as the community colleges have their new facilities, we want to get things to them. We're going to loan things to local museums. We're trying to work up a program with the new museum in Anchorage, which has a marvelous exhibit facility and is looking for exciting and new exhibits. We can provide some of this material. We're trying to get more involved with schools. We're trying to work up some small exhibits that can be easily transported to villages where they can't easily get the kind of material they want to see. We're going to start doing lecture programs to school. We're trying to work up our exhibit department into a facility that will be able to provide exhibits for all of the university for special occasions. For instance, if we had a better exhibit department now, we could be building an exhibit for this program in LA at Century. We're trying to continue developing the collections so we can work with them. We're trying to work on a program where we can give students some training in museology so they see how their subject field applies as far as its connection to museums. With all these things, we're trying to reach the university community at all levels, the Fairbanks community, because it's here and we belong to it, all the urban and rural populations by working with schools and the many new museums that have sprung up in the state, public school classes, tourists, who are one of our very important audiences, as you could tell if you were here any day in the summer, and industry, which needs some of the basic information that's available, basic background information on all of Alaska, which we try and give in the area, specific information which is available in some of the collections. That turns into a kind of spaghetti-like affair because many of these reach many of these, but it's fun to do it that way. We do this now with a staff of four people, a director, a technician, secretary, and one person who doubles as a curator of ethnology in our school service person. We have to make the staff grow. We have curators who are part-time. They're all connected to academic departments. We have lots of student assistants. We're going to try and move some of the attendance to full-time. There's often a need for person there all in the museum regularly. We have to build up the whole exhibit department. We have to build up a closer association with departments and have more time spent by the curators in the museum and using the museum materials in the academic program. We have to work up to a full-time person in the public service program. I might show you how our budget breaks down at the moment. Most of it is salary for these four full-time people, include them, and for the curators and for the student help. Small part of it is equipment, and a great deal of this has gone into just cases to house the collections so far because the collections needed this immediately. And we're starting to taper off on that and are going to be able to put more of it into travel, supplies, services, and the services is the important part here. This is our budget projection, and it's kind of appalling, but don't be too appalled. That yellow line is a hypothetical one, which signifies a new museum building. What I'm trying to show here is that our budget has been going up as our services increase, but as we consider a new building and new programs, we're going to have to consider an increase in budget. The budget is going to have to increase before we have a new facility because we have to do proper kind of planning. It's going to have to increase afterward because we're only going to move ahead. Let's go back because that's important. And that's where we like to move ahead to. Right now, there's an ad hoc committee planning There is an architect working on plans, and we're hoping that someday this will be a center of information on Alaska for not only Alaska, but for the rest of the world.
Thank you, Lou. Might add to that, Lou, that part of our Christmas season was a welcome gift from the prominent Alaska for the planning funds for this new museum, specifically for that.
And now Jane Williams will talk about the other two ones.
We were busy making up visuals for everybody else that we got a little bit in on the slow end. Sometimes I think the Department of Audiovisual Communications is like the miscellaneous drawer in everybody's home, you know. Everybody throws things in there, and once in a while you sort it out and you find you have some parts that go together. And it is true. We find that these are valuable things in the miscellaneous drawer. For instance, our $26,000 worth of equipment that we have is deteriorating at about a third of that deteriorates every year. And so we constantly try to pick up new equipment, and in 5 years, even just if we didn't even go into new types of equipment, we need about 10 times this amount. I watched and listened several of these sessions, and you can see the increase in the use of visual services, and the techniques you are using to communicate to one another are really wonderful. You're getting the picture much faster by some of these techniques. I think that one of the important things that we must remember is that if your campus grows, your staff grows, this department is a support function for all of these things. And unless you fund us too, it's almost like building a house without putting heat in Alaska. You've got to think about this. And you will keep staff if they are well supported in every phase of their work. And if, when I have to say to them, I'm sorry we've run out of rental money for film, I'm sorry we've spent our budget, it really breaks my heart, because I know they are very sincere in wanting these things. Our film situation, we only have 1,000 films, but this is 1,000 more films than you had in 1961. Most universities our size will have 3,000 to 8,000 films ready to go for the professors. We are increasingly getting correspondence from the rental film libraries. I'm sorry, if it comes to Alaska, it's got to go air, partial post, I mean air freight and special delivery, and you can only have it for 2 days. We would like to be able to send excellent film to the community colleges for their staff, and yet we get it in, there's a $25-$30 bill attached to it, and we've got to rush it back. It would be better had we just had it right here on the campus. In fact, we would save money. There is an terrific impetus now on films for higher education, and any money spent on film does a tremendous is a big word, amount of educating, both here and villages, anywhere where you go. We are investigating and going slowly into the area of archive film. There's some film even as early as 1940 40 that we should be getting in our in an archive film section. We have a small archive film section. It is growing. Some of the films that we have in our collection right now, such as Hauling Coal to Point Barrow, The Meat River Reindeer, taken by Laura Jones out there in the bush, we have pulled off of the circulation. They are so valuable that they are now archive material and must be in some way preserved and reproduced. I want to remind you too that your Look North film is almost archive material, and a new film is desperately needed in this area. In fact, perhaps you should plan to revise this film every 2 or 3 years. Lou, how many did we have viewing that film last summer, just visitors? Ran into six figures.
It's hard to say offhand. There were probably about 30,000 people saw that film during the year.
And we send this all over the United States and anywhere in the world when they ask for it.
Put in the diplomatic culture.
It would be wonderful.
It was.
Yeah. Well, it now needs to be revised and redone. Just an idea. What we offer in services on the campus, we'd like to, as we had in the television presentation, we'd like to offer more graphics, more photo services. Students are coming in tremendous rates every day. They want to present good material. They want to be able to use all these things. And we want to have the facility to say, all right, here's a tape recorder. Go to it. Or here's a camera. Let's do it. They're getting into the habit too of using visual services. Should we go into television at this point? Well, should we? There is no doubt in my mind that perhaps we should have 2 or 3 units, such as we presented to you on this presentation today, ready for use for anyone on the campus. What about university relations? There are on-the-spot jobs that can be done with Porta Sound, carry, such as they did with the show yesterday. You can carry it right to the scene, take it instantly, and have it there. Yes, we should be going into the television area. One way or another, in the new building perhaps, yes. But the University of Alaska should be leading out in educational television, public service television. By 1970, I heard a report by Augie Hebert saying that the domestic satellite would be up there. And are we ready to put out the software, the programs for this tremendous educational tool? No, we're not ready. In the research area, there are many audiovisual or educational media departments throughout the country that are going into research. And what are they doing? They're researching large group instruction. How do you teach a large group? And believe me, this needs to be researched on this campus. I have watched the professors in Scheibel trying to teach to a couple hundred students, and it is pitiful. We've increased tried to do something to the audio system, the projection system, but there needs to be research done in this area. How can we best teach to large groups? There needs to be a lot done in how we evaluate a student. Could be that the medieval period of grading and testing, the scare, is that all we have? Is that all we have to make a student work? And there needs to be a lot of work done in this area. Curricular revisions. I have known professors on their own time to start in with revising the way they would present something, using all these things, all the film that we have, and get bogged down because they didn't have the time to do it. And this needs to be work done. TV teaching is a whole new technique of its own. We need to know where we can project Could we have community colleges using television teachers? What is wrong with television? Sure, there are lots of things wrong with television teaching. What is it? Is it because we can't get the information back, can't get the questions back, and the information back again? These things will be on our shoulders, these questions, before we're ready for them. We don't watch out. How can a computer assist every professor in his job of teaching? How can he? Could be that every professor, if he's going to do any evaluation at all, should do it through a computer assist. Dial access, you've heard of these things. A student sits in his room, dials on the phone, or on a dial, sort of like your phones that are in your homes now, and on comes his lesson on television, or something like this. Are we ready for this? No. No, we're not ready for it. We don't even have enough projectors to project things. We're coming to it, though. And your children's children, or my children's children, maybe in the age of an entirely new concept in teaching. Well, it is really fun in my department. You want to call it fun? Because we get a cross-section of the entire university and their great desire to do a better job of teaching. It's wonderful. It's too bad when we can't serve them well, but it's a job that needs to be done, and we're glad to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. As we were working on this presentation, there were many, many ideas which were kicked about, and it became evident to us that there needs to be study on closer coordination between these support services. And I think this is a direction we need to look to the future. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Members of the board. Not, then we certainly thank you, Joe. Yes, Jane. Very fine.
All right. Can I say just a word?
Yeah.
There are two people here that work in the Department of Audiovisual Communications that have been important to this conference. One of them doing the taping of the entire conference, and the other providing the equipment, who is also our technician and a graduate of the Electronic Technology Program. And I wondered if the Mrs. Williams wouldn't introduce them to the regents.
This is Richard Sullivan, our technician. He went to bed last night about 5:30. He does a marvelous job. He's always ready to help you. This morning at 5:30. Yeah, that's right. he's always willing to help you. And Crystal back there has been doing the work on the tape recorder.
I'd like to introduce my co-helpers on the staff also. Most of them you saw as actors in the videotape. Mrs. Galbraith, head of our catalog department. Mrs. Herring, head of our reader services department. Mrs. Harris, head of our documents department. I'm not quite sure what time Mr. McCarthy got to bed, but it was kind of late too. He's our university archivist. And our assistant over here, assistant head of reader services, Mr. Steve Sherman, did the audio for the videotape presentation. Also present, and one of the people I was mentioning of doing special projects, is Mary Matthews, in the assistant in the catalog department.
Thank you. Next on the program is the presentation, Education for Alaska Native Students, and this is a committee on education for Native students. The chairman of this committee is Dean Belkey. Chuck?
Well, he's got to be up there collecting stuff. The news from Washington is not always encouraging, but those of you who live in Fairbanks, I think, will be...
Members of the Board of Regents, their spouses, Alaska State Legislators, distinguished guests, President Mrs. Wood, Vice Presidents, and their spouses, faculty, and students. When Francis Bacon said that reading maketh the full man, perhaps he was right for his time. In the second decade of the second half of the 20th century, however, the means by which man acquires his education must be as diverse as the centuries themselves. Today on this campus, as elsewhere, creative and performing arts must range from those involvements which elevate man's spirit to those which might preserve his very life or that of his country. This evening, we have passed out a schedule to explain to you some of the creative and performing arts conducted here at the University of Alaska. The only change on the schedule is that number one will become number two on the program, and number two will become number one on the program. I would like to introduce to you Professor Lee H. Salisbury, head of the Department of Speech, Drama, and Radio. Professor Salisbury.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to announce that the act we had scheduled at this time has had to be canceled. However, we were very fortunate to find an old journalist out in the hall who had wandered in here. He thought it was the Billiken. We haven't told him otherwise. He refuses to be introduced and insists upon doing this himself. He wants, as he says, everyone to get the facts straight. So without any further ado, I think you ought to bring that old gentleman in here. He says he has a light phobia, so we may have to turn off the light. Would you come in here, sir?
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce to you a man whose great learning and veneration for truth are only exceeded by his high moral character and majestic presence. I refer in these vague, general terms to myself. I was born modest, but it wore off. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you don't mind if I smoke. I believe there is some commandment against smoking during insurrections of this dignified nature, but I'm working to get it removed. Mind you, I have no objections to abstinence, so long as it does not harm anybody. I practice it myself upon occasion. I make it a rule never to smoke while asleep. Not that I care for moderation myself. I do it as an example to others and to show that I'm not a slave to the habit. But I can give it up whenever I want to. I've done it a thousand times. Well, one time I gave it up upon the advice of my doctor. I had been confined to my bed for several days with the lumbago. And the doctor finally said to me, now look here, my remedies haven't got a chance. Consider what they have to fight besides the lumbago. Why, you smoke extravagantly. You eat all manner of things that don't agree with each other's company. You drink two hard scotches every night, don't you? I said, yeah, I do. But I only drink them as a preventative of toothache. I've never had the toothache. I don't ever intend to have it. Well, the fellow said that that's all right, but we can't make any progress that way. You gotta moderate those things. I can't do it, doctor. He said, why not? Why, I said, because I lack the willpower. I can cut them off entirely, but I can't moderate them. Well, he said that would answer. So I cut off all those things for 2 days and two nights. And at the end of that time, the lumbago was discouraged and left me. I was a well man again. So I gave thanks and took to these delicacies again. Well, then, I had the occasion to recommend this remedy to an elderly lady friend of mine. She had gone down and down to the point where medicine no longer had any healthful effect upon her. And I told her I could cure her within a week. I said she must give up smoking and drinking and eating and swearing, and by the end of the week, she'd be on her feet again. Why, she said she couldn't give up smoking and eating and drinking and swearing because she'd never done any of those things. So there it was. She had neglected her habits. She was a sinking ship without any freight to throw overboard. Well, I've never taken any exercise myself, except sleeping and resting. I don't ever intend to take any. I could never see any benefit in being tired. My habits protect my life. They'd probably assassinate you. You gotta make your own rule and stick to them. If you can't reach 70 by a comfortable road, don't go. Oh, I suppose it's a good idea. Obey all the rules when you're young, just so you'll have the strength to break them when you're old. Oh, it's a terrible death to be talked to death. And to tell the truth, my feet are tired and you are tired. Good night.
Salisbury, I think that if on these cold nights you could bring in any of the other characters that the frigid air might flush from some of the local bands, we'd be happy to hear them again. Quite contrary to what Samuel Clemens might advocate, we plan this evening to get a little exercise. And Professor Davis, the head of the Department of Music, will explain to you how we will begin this exercise this evening. Professor Davis.
Representing the music department, we of course know that most of you are familiar with our performing ensembles, such as the Choir of the North, the Concert Band, the Madrigal Singers, the Orchestra, which last year went to Fort Yukon. All of these we're extremely proud of. However, we do not have, I think, the opportunity to present for your entertainment and also for the general public as much of some of the rather unique talents which we feel that we have at the university. This morning we mentioned that we have certain particularly gifted students that we feel our program does not extend as far as we wish that it might. And one of these, a very important area, is in the area of composition. As a talent grad student here at the university, we have Philip Craig Corey, who is a student from Kenai, Alaska. His performing area is the piano, and it's in this area that he was chosen for a talent grant and is an extremely gifted performer. At Kenai High School, he not only was a musician there, studied piano, but also was valedictorian of his senior class at Kenai. Since coming to the University of Alaska, he has maintained this type of scholastic standing. Last year, his average for the first semester was 3.85. The second semester was 3.76. Professor Beal, his teacher, says of Craig that he feels that although he has tremendous performing talents in piano, perhaps his greatest potential lies in the area of music composition. And Mr. Beal has given of his time to help develop on an individual basis this talent of Mr. Corey's. Last April, Professor Beal premiered his Craig's three preludes for piano. And these, besides being written for the virtuoso piano, demonstrate very good understanding of music techniques. Again, Mr. Beal says, a very gifted young composer who might possibly develop into a creative musician of great importance. It is Craig Corey that we would like to present to you in a new composition that he has just completed some 2 weeks ago. This is a fugue which is written in an atonal style, which is a very contemporary style, not the usual concept of harmony. And the fugue as a music form is one of the most demanding of all types of composition because it has very strict rules of line and development. Now tonight, we are going to ask you to, in getting ready to hear Mr. Corey, to go out and if you will gather somewhat adjacent to the piano, but please not too close so that you get a little bit more perspective of the piano. It's a very short composition, but before we take you out, we would like to have you meet Craig Corey. Craig, if you will come up here, please. Craig is a junior here at the University of Alaska. And again, after you have had a chance to move around to the other portions of the program, we would also invite you to look at the posters displaying works of the music department as well as drama and so on in the foyer. Now, if you will please move out into the area adjacent to the piano, we'll have this fugue. Thank you.
I'm torn between wanting to see him as a student and not wanting to see him as a student.
I think you will please move just within the display. Thank you.